All right, we're live, and the second that I hit the go live button, Ed is frozen again. Typical. He'll be back shortly. There's no doubt about that. That's all good. Ladies and gentlemen, this is day X, is the way that I describe it. Is if you've ever have you ever seen the movie Salt with Angelina Jolie in it and Liev Schreiber in there? They play the Soviet agents that are embedded in the CIA, and they're just waiting for the trigger to be pulled, right? And the day the trigger gets pulled, that's day X. Well, today, in my view, is day X. This has been something that I've been talking about for the last 2.5 years. I feel like I've been beating that dead horse for a long time now, and now this has actually come to pass. It's a bit of a scary proposition. I always said that there was three triggers for the Third World War. One was an attack on Iran, which happened in Syria. The Israelis attacked them there directly on their sovereign territory in Syria. And then now the Iranians are shooting back. The other one was North Korea invading South Korea. And of course, the CCP invading Taiwan. So we might see all of this unravel in quick time. That's the scary part of it. Ed, it's been a while since we've done an Unspoken Truth podcast together. And I thought it would be really appropriate to do this one live. How are you, mate? It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. It has been a long time. Yeah, well, you know, I'm sitting here counting my silver coins. I figure, man,
stack up. You've got lots of them now. That's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I need a lot more of those with what's going on out there. You know, every once in a while, you know, it seems like every 3 or 4 or 5 years, we get some really dramatic worldwide event that captures everyone's attention, right? And then, you know, 5 months later, we all forget about it, and then we get on with our lives. And we're in one of those little events right now where everything's chaotic. You know, the news is unraveling fast. The initial reports are always wrong, but that's all you have to go by. And it's easy to imagine the worst. Your imagination is a pretty powerful thing, and it can make you think about all the, you know, things that could come of it. And there's not really a whole lot you can do about it except let time pass. Now, the question I have for you, Rob, is, so what would your advice be to people? Would you say, hey, would you grab them by the shoulder and say, you got to be paying freaking attention? Or would you say, man, don't worry about it. Go do your grocery shopping. Go to your baseball games. So what would your advice be to people right now?
Well, yesterday in Sydney, we saw the biggest terrorist attack we've ever seen in Australia. There was a crazy person running around Bondi Junction shopping centre. We don't know if it's a Islamic terrorist. We can't say. It doesn't appear to be, actually. So maybe in some ways that's a good thing. Takes the heat out of it a little bit. Just looks like a crazy person. That crazy person running around stabbing people. I was just up at the local shops. I took my missus to work and there was plenty of people around there, and it was before the shops opened, people having coffees, just going about their Sunday morning as normal. What I would say is just go about your life as normal, especially here in Australia and in the United States. You'll be okay there. But I promise you, in the next couple of weeks, when you drive past the petrol station, you're going to feel this conflict, because the Iranians are about to shut the Straits of Hormuz like they shut the Bab el-Mandeb Strait in the Red Sea, and 30% of the world's oil comes out of the Straits of Hormuz. And that is going to cause inflation at a scale that we've never seen before. So those silver coins that you've got there, hold them up for me, Ed. Hold them up. We told you so. We told you so.
Yeah, told you so.
Yep, there it is. Man. That's going to be the currency of choice very soon.
And my gold coins.
Yep, there it is. The price of oil is going to run away. You know, the Saudis want that at $85 a barrel. I think we're going to see that at $185 a barrel. And that is going to affect every single person on planet Earth. The cost of everything is just going to go through the roof. So what I would say, if you had an opportunity today, go to the shops right now and go and stock up on your groceries. Yeah, go and buy the groceries. Stock up your freezer so it's like chockers. Go stock up your pantry as well so it's chockers, because we're a gazillion miles away from this conflict in the Middle East, and it's not really going to affect us kinetically, but it is going to hit you in the hip pocket when it comes to oil prices, diesel prices, and petrol prices. That's the thing that's actually really going to sting hard. So I want to just share a little bit of the news as it's updating, and I can't really... I can't show you my Telegram screen share, right? Or I kind of can, but I just don't want to get canned on YouTube. So let me just read. So this is from the Telegram channel called The Defenders of Iran. And it says, a forwarded from an Israeli statement. Israeli Army spokesman Daniel Hagari claimed that Iran fired dozens of ballistic missiles at Israel, causing minor damage to a military base. He says that most of the missiles were intercepted by the Arrow missile defense system. He says that most of the missiles were shot down outside of Israeli airspace. Hagari said that one hit injured a young girl, and others record minor damage to infrastructure. So let me just share my screen and let's bring this all together. Let me just share the entire screen here. And if I just bring up, this doesn't look like something small. Let me just turn the sound off. These attacks look like they're getting through. So that certainly doesn't look like a rocket that's launched by Hezbollah coming across the way there. That looks to me like that is actually a ballistic missile landing there. I could be wrong. And again, I'm going to have to turn the sound off these videos as we play through them as well. As I scroll through the X feed, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's in there as well. All these people running around, not really knowing where to go. Luckily in Israel, they've got lots of bunkers around and there's plenty of places to get in some cover. Here's some outgoing fire. A lot of it is really hard to verify, right? This is just people posting and hashtagging Iran here on X. So outgoing fire looks like that. Where's that coming from? What is on fire? What particular is on fire? I don't know, Ed. What do you think, mate, when you see this footage? There's some other footage. That's a ballistic missile, man. That's landing there. Look at that.
Ooh. Yeah.
Two of them.
You know, it kind of, you know, I don't know what the word is. It doesn't feel real, right? It feels like you're watching a video game. It doesn't feel real because it's off in the distance and there's a flash. But people don't realize probably that in the moment around that flash, people are being killed or things are blowing up. From a distance, it just looks like a flash. But that's a violent explosion. Seen from miles away. And you know, we have it so freaking good here in America. I'm sitting here in a nice little my comfort of my Minnesota home, and you're in Sydney, and we're well removed, you know. But imagine, you know, if you're in Israel, I mean, use a little imagination. What if your next door county, state, or whatever is lobbing missiles at you?
Yeah, it's a scary thing. And what we're seeing unfold here, Ed, is these crazy people, man, that run the world. This idiot here on screen, this Ayatollah, thinks that he can wipe Israel off the map. He thinks that he can actually destroy another country. And my problem with all of this, and I've been doing a lot of reading about nuclear war recently. There's a woman out there, her name's Annie Jacobson. She's a really prolific author. She writes a lot about the American government and American security services. You might have seen a bunch of interviews with her going around in relation to her latest book called Nuclear War. And she talks about in that book, she talks about deterrence. And I mentioned this earlier on the live that I was on before, that deterrence, it only works when people don't shoot at each other. When nuclear missiles or ballistic missiles don't get launched at each other, that's when deterrence works. Deterrence fails the minute that somebody launches a nuke. So if this attack continues and it's ongoing, and it looks like it's ongoing as well, because every couple of minutes when I refresh my X feed and I look at my Telegram feed, there's more and more footage that's coming out of it. I wonder what the actual reaction here is going to be. Tell me what you think about this, Ed, because it looks to me like the Iranians are pitching, yeah, and the Israelis are catching. We're playing pitch and catch. And really, that's what was happening with the Houthis in the Red Sea. You can fire as many missiles as you want at us, and we're just going to shoot them down. Maybe one or two get through, and that's what we're seeing from some of the footage there as well. One or two are getting through, but at some point, the air defenses are going to be completely exhausted and saturated. And my concern is that Hezbollah in the north are going to launch thousands of missiles at the Israelis, and then at the same time, the ballistic missiles are going to start landing on Israel. So if they time it right and coordinate it right, there's no pitching and catching. There's only pitching. That's what's going on.
Well, are you factoring in those American warships sitting off the coast?
Definitely. So we've got a couple of destroyers there. We've got a carrier there as well. So we've got the layered air defense system with the the Israelis are able to intercept the ballistic missiles that are coming. So the US Navy can do that with SM-3 and SM-6 on those destroyers as well. And then you've got the low-flying Shahid drones. And we haven't seen those drones land yet. There was footage before of a whole bunch of Shahid drones launching from Iran, and they're going to transit all the way across Iraq, and they're going to head that way. That's a very, very long way. And that was only a couple of hours ago, literally when I first woke up and I looked. It was, what time was it? It must have been about 6:30 in the morning. So those Shahid drones have yet to actually land. So there's a whole bunch that's happening over there as well. So I wonder how much longer it's going to be before those Shahids actually start arriving there. And if they fired a couple of hundred of those at them, and then Hezbollah launch in the north all at the same time, it's all a very scary proposition, man. We're in a tit for tat thing. So what is the Israeli response to it all?
If I were them, I'd say just, does the word obliterate translate into Hebrew? I mean, look, these people are, look, go biblical on these people. That's what I'd be saying. That's the only thing that bullies understand. Now, well, let me ask you, do you think that this is just a very poorly calculated case of brinksmanship where they're betting that Israel will not come back to them in a really big way, and they're just hoping that, all right, we'll do a show of force just to let people know that we're here, get a little bit of attention, and get our little, we can say that we got our pound of flesh for our guy who was killed last week, by the Israelis. They can say they've done that. Right. And then, OK, mission accomplished. And now we'll all go back to the way it was before. I mean, do you think?
You just froze there a little bit. Let me answer that question while it unfreezes itself and catches up a bit. I think the answer to the question is yes. Previously, we've seen the Iranians do exactly what you're describing there with that brinkmanship and that saber rattling. And we know the history of that when Donald Trump made the decision to attack Soleimani when he landed at Baghdad International Airport. So he landed at the airport, he got out, drove out the front gate with his entourage, and he ate a Hellfire missile in the process. And the Iranians telegraphed a response that they said that they were going to attack the Americans in Iraq on that airbase. And they lobbed, I think from memory, it was like 22 ballistic missiles at him or something like that. And they really damaged the location, and they caused all sorts of problems for it. So we've seen a history of the Iranians doing exactly what you're describing there, Ed. So that's definitely something that we're seeing happen. So this video that's on the screen there, what we've got is a barrage of rockets coming at them from the north, and here is the Iron Dome system catching them all there. So we're playing pitching and catching there. And once we see the Shahid start arriving in country there inside of Israel, I'm sure that that's actually going to escalate into something else. I'm not sure what you heard there when I lost you there for a sec, Ed. What I was saying was the answer to your question is yes. And the reason for it is because previously when Donald Trump went after Soleimani and that happened, the Iranians telegraphed their response, and it was a limited response with what they actually had previously. So we may see a limited response like this, but I don't think Netanyahu's going to he's just not going to sit there and actually take it. There's no possible way he's going to take it. Another country can't launch on you like that, and he's not going to sit there and go, all right, you fired 100 missiles at me and all those drones at me and all this there, and I'm just going to go, all right, that's cool. That was the tit for the tat. We blew up your embassy, and now you fired at us like this? No way, man. Right now, what I think is happening, I think the Israeli Air Force is en route to go and bomb Iran.
Hey, man.
Take their nuclear facilities out, man. That's what's happening.
Hey, man, your lips to God's ear. You know, I would love to see that. There's a part of me, there's the underdog in me who hates bullies. And there's a real sense of satisfaction when that bully gets punched in the mouth. Not just punched in the mouth, but beat to a pulp. You know, there's a really good sense of satisfaction. However, you know, you have to wonder whether the weak-kneed, you know, jelly-belly people that we have in running our government are on the phones to Netanyahu saying, you know what, we really don't want you to. We really don't want you to. We have people, we have lunatics, we have Looney Tune people in our government here who want to protect Hamas, who are sympathizers to Hamas. And I've got to win an election this year. And Dearborn, Michigan is up in arms with me over my defense of Israel in any kind of a way. So, you know, I've got to win an election, man, this year. So I can't afford to have you going after Iran in a big way. You got to wonder to what degree politics is going to, you know, and American. Now, if I were Netanyahu, I'd say, F you, man, it's my country. I'm going to do what I think I have to do to protect my country. However, where do they get most of their munitions? Where do they get most of their support? America is their biggest supporter, is their biggest ally. And, you know, Israel is a tiny, tiny speck of a country. You know, can they really afford to get on the wrong side of our largesse? So I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here because, I mean, I'm with you, man. I would love, you know, I would love to see, you know, Tom Cruise show up at a press conference there, you know, tomorrow saying, all right, mission. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about that either, Ed. You know, the biggest supporters of it all are definitely the United States because they're supplying all of the weapon systems and they're making that all happen as well. But does it make it right? Do we need to be drawn into the conflict? I saw a funny post before on Clown World on X, and it said, an attack on Israel is an attack on the United States. Like that's the, someone had, like he'd screen grabbed that and above and said, no, it's not. It's an attack on Israel.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's true. What we got here on the screen is not fireworks. What do you think that is?
The Iron Dome intercepting?
No, man, that's an exo-atmospheric interception. So that's the ballistic missile being intercepted before it enters the atmosphere. So that's hitting a bullet with a bullet.
Wow.
And remember, the ballistic missile, as it follows the ballistic trajectory, it's easy to intercept because we can predict the trajectory and we fire a missile at it that hits the missile. So something coming back into the atmosphere at 25 times the speed of sound, because that's how fast it's coming in, and the missile firing it at, you know, 4 or 5 times the speed of sound and then hitting together, that's what you're actually seeing, the kinetic interception. So that could be the Arrow missile system there intercepting, or that could be SM-3 or even SM-6 with the ballistic missiles that are in there as well. So really...
It is kind of considerate that these terrorists always do these attacks at night so we get the full effect of the fire, right?
So we can see everything, actually going on with it all, right? Yeah. So it's really, really interesting. Now, I always think it's funny here that they try and have some sort of moral equivalence where they're showing footage like this on the screen of the result of Iran attacking Israel. Oh, wait, this is the genocide and destruction of Israel in Gaza. All of these people that are saying that there's a genocide going on, there's a destruction, there's all of this. I would challenge them to say that you've never actually been in war. You don't know what war looks like. If you've been on the receiving end of a ballistic missile that looks like this, then you know what war looks like. There is no moral equivalence.
No.
There's none. What? There's winning and there's dying. Yeah? And in order for you to win, you must destroy everything. Your enemies will be completely and totally destroyed. That's just what it looks like to me. And
well, no army, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, Rob, but no army in history has ever gone up against this kind of an enemy where they've had 15, 20 years to build underground tunnels that go for dozens and dozens and dozens of miles. Very sophisticated underground tunnel system. And every single one of those tunnels are strategically placed under human shields, hospitals, schools, and so forth. And so they say, you can't kill me. And then they hide behind a kid. I dare you. Then they run under a skirt. These people, are cowards, and they hide behind innocence. So what is Israel supposed to do? Mm. I do believe that they go out of their way to avoid killing civilians. On the other hand, there's no way they're going to be able to destroy Hamas without going after those tunnel systems. And if you're going to take out those tunnel systems, you're going to have to take out some hospitals and schools.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's a funny post I saw before. This is everybody watching what's going on now. And the reality of all of this, Ed, and everything that you're describing there, is that people sit on the side commentating, saying that, you shouldn't be attacking those hospitals. You shouldn't be attacking those people's homes. Yes, you shouldn't. I agree. You shouldn't be doing that. But it's a war. What do you want me to do? And if you remember right back at the very start, I remember when they were getting ready to go into Gaza and all of that was actually happening. And you and I were having a conversation about what they were going to do and how this was going to happen, how the military operation was going to unfold. And the reality of the way it happened was it unfolded exactly the way that I described. I was an infantry soldier, and I know just from military operations in urban terrain, mount operations, are the most complicated, dangerous things that you can do as an infantry soldier. And what they were doing was as the Israelis moved up on the actual positions that they were looking for. I'll play the sound there, yeah? Hear that? They're the mopeds, yeah? The little Shaheds. The Shahids are now arriving there. Well, that's a departure maybe, or a launch. These are the Shahid drones here that you can see on the screen. So the only way for the Israelis to conduct the operation would be to actually, they're moving up with their armor and they're using heavy weapons to suppress the enemy, and then they're sending infantry in behind them to clear the buildings. That's what they're doing. And as the armor moves up and covers the infantry go in behind, but the infantry go into these buildings, and there's been boatloads of footage come out, and the Israelis put it out all day long, where they go into a building and the enemy soldiers are in there. They engage with them just to protect themselves. They withdraw, and then they just drop a bomb on it and get rid of it, because what they're trying to do is not actually engage with the enemy. What they're trying to do is get rid of them. Ed, you're going to have to take over for a sec because there's someone at the door. I'll be right back.
Okay, go ahead. For anybody out there who might be watching the live stream, we'd love to give you your ideas on this. Do you think that the things we're saying are off base, or would you like to let's take a little poll among our audience. Do you think Israel should obliterate Iran, or do you think Israel should play nice and hold off?
I'm not sure how I feel about that. I don't know how to feel about any of it, right? Like, just because of what's actually going on with it. Like, what should we feel about this? I be cheering on for Israel? Should we be cheering on for Iran? Or should we just be sitting on the side neutral?
Cheering on for Iran. Yeah, that's good, Rob. Yeah, that's Iran just might have a point here. Yeah, no.
I got no skin in the game, man.
Yes, you do. If you think it through, yeah, you do, man.
And that's the process.
If you put gas in your car, you do have a stake in it. If you have money in the markets at all, yeah, you have a stake in the game. If you like your electronics to work, you have skin in the game.
that is true. I find it funny when I look at these people. They're outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque cheering, yeah. But Iran are just firing ballistic missiles at you, man. Are all targets as well.
Is that in the Cronulla Park there?
No, we got rid of them all here in Cronulla. Come back since. Yeah, we had our own little riot a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You don't know the Cronulla riots?
Yeah, right. the famous Cronulla riots. Yeah.
Famous Cronulla riots. You go and Google it and you'll see for yourself what's going on.
Was that like two lifeguards and a kangaroo? What's the what was it?
No, there was a bunch of all these Muslims that would come down and they were taking over Cronulla Beach. There's South Cronulla Beach and then there's North Cronulla Beach and then there's a pool in the middle of it. And all of these wannabe jihadists came down and said, "The pool's ours. You're not allowed to come anywhere near the pool, but you can't walk between the beaches without going past the pool." And everyone went, "What are you talking about? Shut up, you idiot. Get the hell out of here." And then there's a big giant like fight and there was a riot and there was all sorts of stuff that went on and all of those people went away and they never really came back. So kind of suits me.
Good. Yeah. But, you know, I think this war, I think what's going on today right now, this is more about PR. I think this attack is more about it's entertainment for their Islamist acolytes around the world. The people in Dearborn, Michigan, they're probably at a sports bar watching, you know, this event, you know, this is PR, right? This is a recruiting campaign about their message, about their image, and how they're victims, and how Israel is a bad guy, and you know, and we're standing up for you. But we need your support. So please go to 1-800-444 white guys and donate to the cause.
You're not wrong, Ed, like with that, but I think you've got it wrong on the side that you're talking about. It's not for the Iranian side or for the Palestinian cause. It's actually for the other side. Netanyahu seems to be against the entire world and his population doesn't like him very much. There's protest after protest continuously because the hostages haven't been released. There's nothing they can do. And the only thing that he can do to save his political skin is to continue with this. When Iran are actually landing ballistic missiles on the ground in Israel, that's going to bring everybody together. Like this footage here that is kind of on repeat, this is what we're seeing. This is going to bring all Israelis together.
Yes.
And irrespective of whether you like Netanyahu or not, the whole country is going to come together. My fear, I don't know, tell me what you think of this thought as well. My fear is this is what we're watching is we're watching not the destruction of Israel, but we're watching the self-destruction of Israel, because I don't think the Turks are going to sit on the sidelines. Turkey came out just 24 hours ago and said that no American aircraft are going to be operating to strike anything to do with that there. So we've got nuclear weapons in Turkey, right? So, and we've got a large American presence in the form of the Air Force there. And the Turks said, no launching from there. And all of the Arab countries on Qatar, Bahrain, the UAE, I'm not sure if Saudi Arabia said it, but they all came together and said, there's no launching airstrikes from our territory across the way there into Iran. And the reason that they said that is because if that happens, the Iranians will just launch ballistic missiles and destroy all of the infrastructure there. And they don't have the air defense systems in place to actually resist the Iranian ballistic missiles. So that is a real problem. But the Americans will do whatever they want because of the aircraft carriers. So they'll just launch from the Gulf of Aden. They'll launch from the other side in the Red Sea, fly across Saudi Arabia, and then they'll strike whatever they want to strike. It's no big deal. We don't have to go across the Persian Gulf to actually hit Iran. We can fire our TLAM from the Red Sea. We can fire TLAM from the Mediterranean Sea if we wanted to attack Iran. And there's nothing that Iran could do about it. And we could equally launch air-launched cruise missiles from the same locations. You can have B-52s and B-2s launching from 2,000 miles away if you really want to. So Iran think that they're untouchable, and they think that they're untouchable because they've threatened U.S. interests in that particular region, but that region doesn't really matter from that perspective. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Well, you know, the potential number of unintended consequences that could come from this is incalculable, right? I mean, if you're the guy at the Pentagon in charge of war gaming and possible outcomes, man, you go nuts. You probably say, I give up. Because you know, if this happens, that could happen. And if they come into this, that could happen. I mean, the potential dominoes, there's no way of predicting how this could end up, right? Any number of people, like I said, Turkey, What if Turkey decides to throw the towel in the ring, whatever the phrase is? What if they decide to get involved? And that gets really tricky because they're supposed to be a NATO ally on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, a lot of these countries, they play both sides of the fence and any particular, you know, conflict that they're in. It gets really, and in terms of having their public take their eye off the ball, he said, Netanyahu, this is actually probably a little gift for Netanyahu in order, you know, it takes him off, you know, his problems get out of the spotlight for a little while. And he's being shown as the Winston Churchill of the country at the moment. And so in that sense, Iran is giving him kind of a personal gift. It's giving him an excuse to be, you know, the big man, to be the next Nobel Prize winner or whatever. It's giving the gifts. And Erdogan, you know what inflation is running right now in Turkey? I mean, inflation's what, like it's 65% now, down from 80%, you know? And so this might be his excuse to take their eye off of that particular ugly ball, you know? And, you know, then there is that old adage, right, with governments that, you know, when all else fails, go to war. And it, you know, things are going really bad, and things are going really bad for our current little nut job in chief here in America. So this might be he might be a little tempted to say, you know, for the greater good, we have to do this because this is a potential existential threat, and he could put on the mantle of being a tough guy, which everyone knows he's not, but he could, you know, yeah, I'm a tough guy. You know, so there are a lot of things that could happen here that have nothing to do with logic, nothing to do with what you think it should pertain to. Like the way Israel responds, well, they could respond for political reasons or for practical reasons. For practical solutions, what do? They probably take out, they pick, you know, a dozen or so of the highest value military, you know, whatever in Iran and take them out. Okay, that's a military thing, right? Okay, well, degrade their capabilities. But then from a political respect, you know what we're going to do? We're going to send a missile at the biggest ass mosque in downtown, you know, whatever, and send that message. So there are a lot of different reasons to respond, right? I mean, depending on what you want to accomplish.
Let me just bring this up on the screen. So this is Bibi's book, right? So I read this book, must have been, gosh, I don't know, 6 months ago. And when you read what Benjamin Netanyahu says, so the book is before that he's re-elected to where he is today. And everything that he's achieved in his political career, he's happy with. So he's the one responsible for the resolution in all of the strikes that were happening. He was the one that digitized their economy. But he was also the one that implemented mass jabbing protocols to every single person in society. And he's not necessarily a good guy. So he's done a lot of good things for the country. He was a special forces soldier as well, right? So he's done a lot of good things for the country when you look at it from that perspective. But he's not a good dude at all, yeah? And when you read between the lines of what he talks about in that book, the biggest regret that he has in politics was he was unable to stop the Iranians from getting a nuclear weapon. And many, many times he's talked about at the UN, remember he was at the UN and he was holding up that sign and there's a picture of like an Acme bomb, you know, like from the Roadrunner or something, and where they're this close to getting a bomb. And every other week, there's some reporter that claims to know that Iran is like 1 week away from enough uranium to create a bomb and to put it on a ballistic missile and blow everybody up. And, you know, then some fake news reporter comes out and says that Israel is a one-bomb country. They only have to lob one nuke at them and that's the end of them. We only need one nuclear weapon and all of this. So if you read his book, Bibi actually says himself that his biggest regret is not taking Iran down and not dealing with that threat once and for all. And it's like they're deliberately goading them into a conflict. And at some point, as you say, the Iranians have to respond. And you said earlier, Ed, that maybe it's just like a limited response that they're actually having, maybe a small response that they're having, or a measured response where we fire 200 missiles at them and that's it, we're not going to do any more. But what we're seeing unfold in real time now is these people taking us to the very precipice, to the edge, because the Israelis are not going to sit there and take it. They've been, missiles and drones have been raining down on them all night, depleting all of their assets, all of their resources, killing their population, killing their people. Now they're going to launch their air force and go and strike Iran directly. And then Iran's not going to sit there and go, oh, okay, cool, we'll just let the Israelis bomb our nuclear facilities and destroy our oil refineries and destroy our shipyards and our navy. We're not going to sit there and take that. What are you talking about? No, we're not taking that. And then now the ballistic missiles are going to start again. And remember, the Israelis have said several times in the last couple of weeks, we've got a special surprise for you. Don't. Yeah. And that special surprise they keep talking about is what they're calling an E-bomb. Yeah. It all sounds very gentle and very nice. They're saying it's an E-bomb. An E-bomb means electromagnetic pulse. Yeah. So we've got an EMP bomb that's going to turn off the lights in Tehran properly. And we're going to turn off the lights for good. We're going to send you back to the dark ages. That's what we're going to do. Yeah. And we're just going to call it an E-bomb. But here it is. This is when nuclear deterrence fails. When you go and change the definition of a recession, you go and change the definition of words, you go to the dictionary and change the definition of words. We've seen the American government do it. We've seen the Australian government do it. They lie to you. They tell you that it's safe and effective. They tell you that everything's okay. And we're just going to use an E-bomb. Yeah, the E-bomb's not going to actually kill anyone. But we've also seen on the other side, when you look at the Iranian doctrine, they say that nuclear weapons are Sharia. They're allowed. Nuclear weapons are allowed because the Iranians have got EMP weapons as well, and they can lob an EMP weapon just as easily at the Israelis as the Israelis can at the Iranians. So what we're missing in all of these E-bombs is that these are nuclear weapons. They're nukes. And the minute that one nuke gets slung, all deterrence for all countries around the world goes away. The deterrence between India and Pakistan goes away. The deterrence between Russia and NATO goes away. Because these E-bombs or these nukes aren't really as bad as what they seem. So maybe we can just lob a couple of these in there and see what happens. So this is a really, really serious existential threat. And remember, deterrence only works as long as we don't actually use these nuclear weapons. Now, that's a really, really, really scary proposition for me. I'm worried mostly about that. I'm worried that that's actually what's going to come to pass. And if we look at this rhetoric, look at this guy, Anis Zahid. All right. At this time, Iran is representing billions of Muslims living in the world. Iran has shaken the Western powers. May Allah make Iran victorious. What a fuckwit. What a fuckwit of the highest order, man. And the reason that I say that is because he's not sitting in Israel now where missiles are raining down on his head. He's not sitting in Tehran where the lights are about to go off, the power stations are going to go off, and life as you know it in Iran is going to change forever. He's not there, but he's encouraging it. And it's easy for somebody sitting on the sidelines on X typing there saying, oh, it will be okay. It will be okay. Good luck. Keep raining down ballistic missiles like this. What a fucking moron. Iran is better than the other Muslim countries. Now Muslim countries need to stand with Iran.
Well, yeah, I mean, that gentleman you just referenced, what was his name?
I don't know.
Okay. He was just quoting out of, you know, the playbook. I'm sure it's published. They probably have it laminated. They get in. They said, "Well, may God, may Allah make us, you know, successful. Make Allah, you know, they've got their bumper sticker speeches, and every one of those speeches said the exact same thing: death to fucking everyone, and we're on the right side. Allah's on our side, and the rest of you, you're all going." One way or another, we're going to take you over. And a lot of those people reading from that laminated sheet are in city councils in the UK and in Dearborn, Michigan.
That, you know, they are. I'm laughing, but it's not funny.
You don't have to be in Tehran. They're all over the fucking world now. These people, you know, this is religious. This is a mission for them, right? This is what they believe. This is what the Islamic State is all about. It's about infiltrating the entire world. And so they quietly settled in every civilized part of the world. And they're like little cells. No, we're not one of those people who believe in killing people. We're one of the good Muslims.
It's the religion of peace. We're peaceful.
Yeah. You know, until they get that coded message, you know, say, oh, there it is. There's the call to action. I don't know how many studies I've seen where they did one last week in the UK where they interviewed 1,000 Muslims in the UK. Mm-hmm. And the number of Muslims that were okay with the idea of jihad is like over 50%.
And well, if you're not a believer, man, I was looking at some stuff the other day about the Yazidis. Remember when ISIS went and round them all up because they think that they're apostates. Because you don't believe the same version of what I believe in, so we're going to get rid of you. And if you don't convert to our version, we're going to get rid of you. And they slaughtered 10,000 people. But there's nobody protesting, go free, free Yazidis. But they're going free, free Palestine. They're just brainwashed fucking idiots. That's what they are. They're brainwashed idiots. And they believe, their belief is that if you are not one of them, you're an infidel.
Yeah.
And according to their so-called books, yeah, which are not worth the toilet paper that they're written on, you should be destroyed.
Yeah, they have the right and the duty to destroy you.
The duty to do it. The duty to do it. Here's a little update from the Defenders of Iran Telegram channel. And so it's not wrong. Yeah, it's not wrong what they're saying here. That's why I want to read it to you.
Okay.
Let me see if I can share it on my screen. So we can show that. So just share the screen.
The Defenders of Iran. Well, I'm glad that you subscribe to that link and not me, because when the government does their search.
I like seeing how they do it. Can you see that? Can you see that on my screen? Can you see my Telegram?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it says, pay attention. This was the first wave of missile attacks where the regime's defense was at its most ready state and the interceptors were in their best condition. The missile defense, which is the densest and most effective defense in the whole world. In this way, the missiles pass through in a erosive conflict at long. I don't know, that didn't translate properly. The result is clear. So what he's trying to say there is to say that we've launched all of our weapons at you. You've intercepted a whole bunch of them, but that's it. That's all you're getting. The next round of missiles that we're going to launch at you, we've depleted your resources already. And once again, what I would say is, that's not wrong. You're saturating the air defenses. If Hezbollah in the north go ahead and launch 5,000 missiles and then the Iranian ballistic missiles start raining down, these things are really going to get through. And it's really, really going to happen. So that's interesting what's going on. It's interesting what they're saying.
Again, I think they are miscalculating, because if it gets to the point where Israel feels like they're going to be wiped out, they've got nuclear weapons, man.
And this is the problem. We've got a surprise for you. And the surprise that they keep talking about is an electromagnetic pulse weapon. And an EMP weapon sounds pretty interesting, but the EMP weapon is a nuclear weapon. And as soon as they use that thing, it's all over.
Let me ask you, we talked about this in a previous podcast, but you know, let me ask you again for the sake of our audience who might be seeing it for the first time. These are nuclear weapons, right? And EMP, the idea is that they fry electrical circuits and so things go down. Wouldn't it also go out and take out satellites above it too? I mean, are they directed downwards? Do they only take out electronics below them? Or does it also take out everything that's above them as well?
No, so it depends on, it's like a footprint, right? So they calculate how big that would be. So they got to calculate how high it needs to be. So what they'll do is they'll let off the nuke in the atmosphere at a height that destroys the electrical grid or whatever it is that they're trying to destroy below it. So the ideal height to destroy the entire electrical grid in the United States is 400 kilometers. Yeah. And the Iranians had two satellites, the North Koreans had two satellites orbiting in a south to north trajectory that were at the exact height. And if you watched it throughout the day, it would stop right over the center of the United States. And if Kim Jong-un went and pressed the button, boom, off go the lights. See you later. It's all gone. And that was a big enough footprint like that. But in my view, they're not going to just use one. Yeah. So you don't just fire one Tomahawk missile. You don't just fire one anti-ship missile. It's just not how it works, right? They're going to fire 5 or 10 of these missile systems at you. And those missile systems are what's going to actually cause all sorts of grief for these people.
Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me ask you.
Someone just at the door again.
Ed. Oh, go ahead.
Carry on. I'll be go one ahead. Sec. Sorry.
Yeah. Because I'm curious about this topic, everyone, about the nature of these EMPs, and because I'm wondering just how temporary and how permanent they are. Because I often joke with Rob that my idea of my dream car is my 1964 Ford station wagon, fully restored with no computer chips in it whatsoever. So that in the next EMP attack, I'm good. I'm golden. I'll be the only guy driving down the road.
That's the bug out vehicle, man.
That's the bug out vehicle. That's my dream car. So my question for you, Rob, is for those cars with the computer chips in them and EMP goes off and they're fried, can you turn the cars back on after a while, or are they dead forever? Are they toast? The same thing with computer systems, electrical grids. Do they go down for a while, but then after a while they reboot, come back up?
It doesn't come back up. It's like a power surge is the way to think of it. There's like three waves of EMP, like 1, 2, and 3, and different frequencies and different things that happen. So what happens is the nuke goes off in the atmosphere and then it touches the power lines, and it runs through the power lines. But if your vehicle is in a car park, it'll probably be okay. But if it's out in the open on the street and the nuke goes off at 200 kilometers above you in the atmosphere, it's going to get fried. That's it. And your mobile phone in your pocket's going to get fried. All the electrical equipment at home's going to get fried. But it's not so much it's not so much what happens to your personal stuff, right? That's not really the issue with the EMP. And not a lot of people recognize or understand why it's such a big thing. Oh, well, if they turned off the power, so what? Like, that they would just fix the transformers over time, wouldn't they? Yeah, they would. That's true. And there's probably enough transformers to get some power back and to solve the problem. We've seen that happen in Ukraine, right? Where the Russians destroy the power stations, but, the power's down for a couple of days, but these engineers figure it out and they solve the problems because they've got no choice. They have to solve the problems. So the reason that the EMP thing is such a bad thing is because everything goes off all at once. And the thing that matters is all of the electronic controllers. So think of all the electronic controllers in everything that you do. So everything that has got to do with the sewage system has going to be destroyed. So now there's no sewage system. Anything that pumps water to get the water to your tap inside of your home to flush your toilet, that all goes away. The traffic lights go away. The mobile phone system and the mobile internet system that we have, completely gone, goes away. So we have no means of communication. We have no means of transacting with each other because the communication is out. Most of the FPOS machines you see inside of a shop are mobile enabled, which means they've got a SIM card inside of them. So if the FPOS machine inside of the shop in the shopping center that you're at works, it won't connect to the mobile phone tower outside because there is no mobile phone network. And the network is completely saturated. So it's not so much the EMP that's destroying the electrical grid, it's the cascading effect of all of those things being switched off, which completely, it actually collapses society. Society will completely collapse as a result of that. Imagine if all of a sudden that the EMP went off in the atmosphere and you'd be like, oh, well, you'd go like this, you'd literally go like this, but the power went off. Yeah. I've lived through blackouts before, so. But then you would just like hear sirens in the background. And then after a period of time, there won't be any more sirens.
Right. Yeah? So, here's the game plan. You find a nice little remote island in the Philippines among the 7,000 islands. You build a nice little hut, and you have an extra little hut with a bunch of bottled water and, food that lasts for 20 years, 25 years. A little bit
of gasoline, a spear gun and a fishing rod, you're good to go.
A BB gun and, That's it. No one around for miles and miles. You got your little Starlink there to hook up just in case, you know the internet does come on. You know, Elon, you figure, you know, you got, you know, I don't know.
There's a way. Yesterday, before all of this craziness that happened in Sydney, because that happened in the afternoon, me and Susie went to the movies for the first time in like months, it was. And we went and saw the movie Civil War. And I was like, I was debating heavily whether or not I was going to pay $60 to go and sit in the dark room and watch a movie about that. But I'm glad that I did. It was absolutely fantastic. It's a 10 out of 10. And it leaves all the politics out of it. And it takes you on a journey with a couple of photojournalists. So it puts you right in there. And as an ex-infantry guy, there's some good infantry combat footage in that. And it's really intense movie. But along the way, it kind of shows you and demonstrates to you what happens to society when society unfolds and when things go wrong, and they go wrong at scale as well. So it's a really scary proposition to see that actually happen. And they do a good job of showing you that on screen without having to give you this big, long, laborious, laborsome background that's going on. They show you, like in high definition, what it's like when you're driving through a town and there's some dude on security has been told not to let you through and they're firing at you. And there's a really good scene in the movie where they're driving along and they're not sure what to do, and it looks like maybe we should stop here. They get out of the car and they're taking fire, and they get in a little bit of cover, the journalists that is, they're in a bit of cover and they kind of look up and there's a sniper pair right there. There's one guy lying in his guts and the other guy's like lying on top of him with the spotting scope, and he's lying there and they're having this exchange, this conversation, they're talking to each other, and he's like, well, which side are you on? And the guy said, it doesn't matter what side I'm on, man. The guy over there is trying to kill us and we're trying to kill him. That's really what happens to society.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'd like to see a movie too, I guess, for if I have a quiet day, but those dystopian movies, they're all the same, man. It's all cookie cutter. You know exactly what it's going to be, right?
It was really well done. You haven't seen one like this before. It was well worth watching.
They're all guys in dirty jeans, and they have the 5 day old stunt double, and they all for some reason have an AK-47.
There's no AKs. It's okay, all whatever.
Whatever. You know, they all have some kind of military weapon. Wow. Where the fuck did all these military weapons come from? You know, but everyone's got them, you know. And there's always a little community run by some, hipster politician who's able to get everyone to work together and you know, make gardens and someone's in charge of the surgery and someone's in charge of, you used to be a Walter? Well, we're going to put you in charge.
Come on, man. Don't be such a cynic. Go and watch it. It's a good bit of chewing gum for your brain for a couple of hours.
Yeah. I still never saw the Barbie movie that you kept, you know, going on about. I have no interest in seeing the Barbie movie.
Come on, man. You got to have more fun in your life, right? There's too much doom and gloom. Let's have some fun here with these idiots. This time, Iran is representing the billions of Muslims, blah, blah, whatever. What do these people say? You're about to find out again that there is no Allah. God Almighty has always been and always will be God Almighty. That's why the Jews are being humiliated all over the world. What? Amen. Amen. Look at all of these fucking freaks. How did all of these freaks get in here, right? God is holy. That's why the Jew is being humiliated.
Is that X? Yeah. I never, I have a Twitter account and... Yep. I post stuff on there once, but I still don't even know how to use X. I never go on Telegram. Telegram, I avoid that at all costs. I have no interest in Telegram.
Clear of Telegram?
Yeah. Talking about, you know, the proverbial sewer. I have no interest in Telegram. But X, I probably should start learning now. X kind of confuses me. It's kind of like, I don't kind of like the layout. It's kind of like all over the board. Well, is that a reply or is that a statement? Is that a... You know, there doesn't seem to be any through lines. It seems random, and every other, I don't know. I'm just not used to it. Just haven't.
You got to be careful with X and take it in small doses, right? Because you get this shit on your screen all the time, right? Look at this in one scroll, Israel is a terrorist state. Iran has the right to defend itself. And then there's this stupid old man taking us right up to the edge of World War III. Meanwhile, the whole world's watching on. Here's all the attacks, right? This is where they all landed. Pretty interesting what's going on.
What I really have to be careful about is when I start watching YouTube shorts and I get on a short where, you know, a baby is laughing at a joke and then you scroll and there's another baby laughing at a joke and you know they're just short enough to make you watch it, and then you know you look up and 2 hours later you're still watching shorts, and that's the thing I've got to be more careful about.
You're getting drawn into it. Look at this Palestinian tear down the wall in the West Bank. Yeah, pretty scary stuff what's going on with all of this, man. It's rapidly descending out of control. If you look at this is a pretty interesting video that we're playing before. If you look at what's going on here, this looks like the ballistic missile that's actually, there's a couple of hits there, but the looks like the bits and pieces from an interception, right? So it looks like a meteor shower. Yeah, so that's the ballistic missile that's been intercepted and all the bits and pieces of it falling down still. Crazy.
I don't know, though, they're blowing up in there.
Yeah, that initial bit didn't it? That big bit there on the right-hand side of it. These two bits here in the right. Yeah, definitely.
That's, you know, the as dramatic as all of this is right now, as this is going on, you know, right now it's Saturday evening here, you know, as this is going on, and it's all live. As dramatic, you know, again, it's easy to have your imagination run away and say, well, what could this lead to? On the other hand, you know, a week from now, we might have forgotten all about it. It's just hard to know when you're in the moment.
I doubt it. I doubt it, Ed. You know, like,
does it feel to you like this is an historical, you know, event?
You know, it feels like what's actually happening is it's the same as when Russia invaded Ukraine. So I'm like, really? I remember when in 2022, when they lined them all up and the Americans said, they're going to invade. I remember sitting there thinking, you know what? Almost 12 months to the day previously, they said they were going to invade. But we were in the midst of COVID when that actually happened in 2021. And they moved all of the equipment, getting the equipment ready for the invasion. And it was like that was the dry run. The following year, in February, they went and did it. And I remember when that happened, I remember thinking, really? In this day and age, this is actually what's happening? And once again, it was a time in history that we've lived through, Ed, where I look at it and think, these wars are very easy to start. Very, very, very easy to start. It's easy to lob a couple of missiles at a country like that, but it's almost impossible to stop it.
You know what?
It's going.
You know what? It actually is easy to end if you want it to end. The war in Ukraine could have ended a year and a half ago.
Yes, exactly, with Boris Johnson signing the peace agreement and all of those, or not signing the peace agreement, even though that was on the table. And I wonder what will Donald Trump do here? And all of this, once again, if we take all of this stuff and we look at it from a deep state perspective, and you look at Macron saying, we're going to put French troops in there, and apparently there's a bunch of French Foreign Legion troops in there right now that have gone to Ukraine, yeah? So the French troops are in there and the Russians are like, well, whatever, who cares, man? We're going to target them as well. Like, it doesn't matter. If you're going to launch aircraft from Germany, Romania, from Poland, we're going to target you there as well. We don't care. The Russians already see themselves at war with NATO. It's not really an issue for the Russians. But for our side, it's a big existential thing. And if you look at what's happening in its totality, take a step back to 50 or 70,000 feet and you look at it, there's no possible chance that Joe Biden's going to win. No chance. So the only thing that they can do is sow as much chaos as possible to try and potentially stop the election. I don't think that will happen. Maybe. Start a war to get everybody to rally around him, because typically the American population won't vote out a sitting president in the middle of a war. So if you get drawn into the war in Europe, the Americans that is, and you get drawn into a war with Iran, the Americans that is, which is much more likely, there's a less chance of Joe Biden being ousted out of office.
I'll disagree with their gentleman's agreement. I think we're not talking about a World War II here, where there's an existential threat to America.
To America, yeah.
Or to Western. Okay. This is a very unpopular war. in America, and it's increasingly becoming unpopular among the publics in Europe. The public, the polls, they don't want to be involved more. The people who are feeding this war are the elites, right? Those are the ones who are propping up this war, but those are the ones who control the money. Those are the ones who control the flow.
So Emmanuel Macron, Schultz, and Rishi Sunak.
The three
WEF puppets.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are actually feeding. Yeah. And now the Czechs as well. Yeah.
You know, and then coming off of a 20-year war, you know, in Afghanistan and the business in Iraq, I think America having boots on the ground in Ukraine, that would be an impossible sell. I don't think that's the war. There might be a conflict out there where they would rally around the president. I don't know. I'd have to think of one. I think the war would have to come to our shores. I think there would have to be, like, if Iran, you know, set off a dirty bomb in downtown Chicago or something.
What about all those freaks that have come across your border, though?
Yeah. Well, that does not bode well for Biden. Okay. If we're talking about that, all, you know, redounds to Trump's benefit. I think if it's an honest election, there's no way Biden wins.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is the whole reason that all of this is going on is because he's not going to win. And the only thing that they can really do is take you to war. That's how I see it. And because Macron, Schultz, and Sunak are all puppets of the WEF, they just do as they're told. They can't seem to make a decision. They're perpetuating the war in Europe. Yeah, and the war in Europe is escalating. Now the Russians are targeting they targeted the biggest power station in Kyiv, destroyed that, so all the power's gone, yeah? And then yesterday, they targeted with 8 Kinzhal missiles the biggest gas reservoir near Lviv, in the western part of Ukraine. So as we move into the cold part of the European winter, all of their heating has gone away. Yeah, they attacked the dam as well in Kharkov up that way that took all the power away as well. And so the energy systems that they have in Ukraine are going away and people are leaving in droves and there's no more soldiers. And yesterday as well, I was reading the news yesterday, they took a clause out to say that there's no more demobilization. If you've been mobilized and sent to the front, you survive, you can come back, go back to your life. No, you stay there.
Yeah. How many times have we said, this is not a war about democracy. This is a war about money.
Yep.
This is a money laundering operation. The money people are in control of this war. They're calling the shot. They're perpetuating this war.
The WEF, that's what I'm saying. That's the whole point, right? And this here, what's going on with Iran, this is all Joe Biden's doing. Joe Biden pulled us out of the JCPOA, so the nuclear agreement, which is the Obama agreement. That's the worst thing that we ever could have possibly have done, meaning kicking the can down the road for nuclear weapons later on. They got us back into it, allowed them to do that, gave them billions of dollars to actually go and fund their weapons and fund their proxies. And then for some reason on October 7th, there was a stand down of everybody. I don't know.
That's why Trump says, if I were president, this never would have happened.
And I agree with that. I think that's true.
I think it is true. You know, because he degraded them. He made them poor. He impoverished them. And Biden, he made them rich again. You know, he gave them the means to carry on, you know, their evil acts. I don't know. You know, so... someday a movie is going to be made where we're going to learn the truth about, you know, the motivation behind these libs who keep feeling the need to empower people who say death to you, you know, death to America. Oh, you want some money?
Tell me a little bit about that, because there's protests in your country where these so-called freedom fighters from Palestine are shouting death to America. Well, in your country, man, they're in America saying death to America. What's going on with that free speech, man?
We're having our little mini version of what's going on in the UK, right? The UK led the way in bringing in and inviting in all these people who hate Western values. And they did it out of a feeling, out of a sense of, you know, I guess collective moral guilt for something, you know, and yeah, we're bad. Yeah, we're pone for the sins of our ancestors. So come on in. You need, and we'll put you on a welfare system. And the idea is, oh, but they're going to integrate into our system, and they're going to learn all the good stuff about the UK, and then and that's how we're going to make them good people. They're going to inculcate our values. Fuck that, man. They kept their values and they doubled up on it.
They just don't care.
They've got their own little ghettos. There's no go zones where the police are not allowed to go into. And the same exact thing happened. You know, a small community was formed in Detroit and Dearborn, Michigan. And so the word got out and they brought their friends over and their families over. And that community grew and grew and grew. And now they run those cities. And here in Minneapolis, the same thing happened here. But our version of that where there was a Somalia community.
And you know, it's the same thing. It's no different.
And you know, our Ilhan Omar came out of our little, you know, crowd of people. So there's
I've been reading this book, Ed. It's called Invaded by J.J. Carroll. So he was a border protection agent, I think. Is that the right way to describe it?
Yep.
He did that for like 20-something years. And he got to like a supervisor, sort of middle management type position. But he explains exactly in really granular detail how the American government continues to break the law. So they create these laws about immigration, but then they completely like obfuscate them and ignore them altogether. And one of the things that he talks about is because he's no longer in border protection, and that he can't stand by and watch what's going on. And he's got a bunch of mates that still work there. And one of the things that he says that his friend said that they've never been so scared. And he said it throughout his entire career, he'd never really been scared of illegal immigrants or something like that. They're either here for financial gain, to be with their family, or for some other reason. But now the people that are coming across are not here for the American dream.
Nope.
They're here to destroy American society.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that, and you know I'm going to be a smart ass here. The good news is that the murder rate in Venezuela year over year has gone down 57%.
You're right. It's gone right down. Everything's looking pretty good in Venezuela. Hey, what do you reckon? All right, Ed. As I'm talking to you, let me just bring up my Telegram feed here as well, because I think that this is pretty interesting what's happening here. So let me just bring that into the middle of the screen so you can see. There's a couple of bits of footage here that we haven't seen. We're not seeing that in X. So Iranian ballistic missile over Iraq heading to Israel. So, you know, when is this from? 8:58 a.m. So it's 11:28 now. So 8, 9, 10, 11, that's 3 hours ago. So that would have got there already. So meanwhile, Israel continues dropping bombs on civilian homes in Lebanon. The sky over the West Bank now. So that's the interception, right? So there's a ballistic missile being intercepted. It looks like it's all breaking up in the atmosphere. Interception of Iranian missiles and UAVs there as well. It's the same thing. These things that look like meteors that are coming in, that's the bits and pieces of the destroyed missile as it's re-entering the atmosphere. We saw that footage before. The strikes. Here's another angle of that as well. I don't know, man.
Wow.
Look at this. All those people are not at the Temple Mount anymore, right? Running away, getting in shelters. Whoever would have thought that's a pretty amazing footage there. The whole thing is about that stupid place. Yeah, hold up those silver coins, baby. As the world burns like it does here on Telegram, that's the thing that's gonna save.
I mean, what can you do, folks? That's what you do. That and your gold. You know, that's get your money out of the fucking banks, put it in the gold and silver, and establish streams of passive recurring income. I mean,
I saw a great I don't know if it was a meme. I don't even think you'd call it a meme. It was like a great comparison, I suppose, is what it was. It showed a picture of somebody holding a gold bar in 1912 or something like that. It was like at the start of the 20th century. And then it showed a picture of somebody holding a gold bar today. And it was the same size, like a same size bar. And it said, back in the day, five of these will buy you a house. Today, five of these will still buy you a house. And I thought, yeah, you're right. That's the way it kind of looks as well, you know, or some version of that, right? So what they're trying to do is to say that the value of it doesn't go away no matter what. The value
You don't even have to go back quite that far. I mean, I'm older than you, but I'm not. I mean, I was born in 1960. I wasn't born in 1900. But I did my own one day out of curiosity, and I said, so gold was $30 an ounce in the year that I was born. Right. No, yeah, right. $35 an ounce. And the average cost of a brand new car in 1960 was $3,600. Okay.
Ten of them.
So if you had taken the number of gold coins that it would have taken to buy a brand new car in 1960, and you put it in a shoebox and you still had it today, those coins today would be worth, what was the math? $240,000. Okay,
so now it's like a 10x.
So not only can you buy a new car, you can buy a couple of new fucking luxury cars, right? So that's from 1960. The value of the U.S. currency has gone down by how last year I was saying 98%, 98%. Yeah. Well, we're now at 99%. The value of the U.S. currency since 1913, since the advent of the Federal Reserve, has gone down by 99% by the buying power of the U.S. dollar. Don't fucking hold on to it. And that's not just our currency, by the way. Pick your country.
Yeah, it's same all currencies. Story. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's all currencies.
It's all made up. The fiat currency we have, they're worthless. They're literally pieces of paper. Literally.
I was watching something yesterday. There was like a Senate estimates or something, and they were saying that America prints $80,000 a second. Like, it's just absolutely incredible how much money is actually lent, and the debt has to stop. It's gonna come to an end. You know, you and I have been talking about this for years and years. I've been talking about this war stuff now, and this war beginning in the last. You know, for the last 2.5 years, I've been talking about that,
and of course, they don't actually
thing too,
huh? Yeah, and of course, they don't actually print them anymore. They press a button and it creates them out of out of thin air. We just use the term printing because it's convenient. But the current stats; these are the current numbers. Okay, the Federal Reserve is printing $300 billion. No, I'm sorry, they're printing. We are paying $100 billion every 3 months just to service the interest on our debt. We are printing an extra $300 billion every 3 months. So I predict that I'm sorry, it's a trillion. We're creating $1 trillion of new debt every 3 months. $1 trillion. Every 3 months.
That's why the end is so near, isn't it? Yeah. Because we haven't talked about this for a while, but the end is fast coming, like it's escalating to a point where it's going to actually come undone, because the amount of the debt that you have, the money, the revenue that you collect won't be able to service the debt that you have. So that's when the whole thing just goes kaboom and goes away.
Yep. Yeah. I believe that by the end of this year, we are going to have a month where we issue $1 trillion in debt in a month. I think by the end of this year, that's where we will be, $1 trillion a month. The CBOE put out an estimate that by 2035, which is not very far along away, by 2035, 100% of our tax receipts will go toward just servicing our debt.
What happens then? What happens to the American economy then? That's why this war is starting now. When all else fails, we'll take you to war. The economy is going to completely collapse. The geopolitical situation is going to completely collapse. And the American hegemony goes away forever, permanently.
Well, yeah.
Like, and it's the only thing that they can do.
Well, yeah. I, this can, it is not sustainable. There is no, the only way out is to default our way out at some point. That day is going to come. It's inevitable. And that day is going to be, I might not be alive to see it, but my guess is my kids will be alive to see it.
Don't you think that will happen sooner rather than later?
It depends on, I guess it's all relative, right? There's a lot of high-powered vested interests in keeping things the way they are, right? We have a lot of people making a lot of money off of this Ponzi scheme. And so they're going to keep it on life support as much as they can, as long as they can possibly do it. And their biggest asset is the ignorance of the public. Most people don't understand what's going on. So that's why they're able to get away with this. And that's why these politicians are able to spend the way they spend it, because most people are not.
What happened? We lost you. You froze again. Let me keep it going as Ed unfreezes himself there. We'll give you the update
on the story. Okay, so I'm back. Okay, so yesterday our Congress awarded $5 billion bailout to some nonprofit theaters.
What?
Yeah, these are woke theaters, right? They put on plays on like transgenderism and you know, lesbian dance theory and stuff. You know, nobody wants to go to these plays, right? So they need a bailout. You know, they're not allowed to go under. And they're not allowed to, hey, go get a real job. No, so $5 billion
yesterday. Crazy, man.
These people have no respect for money. And the week before, Biden issued an additional $7.5 billion worth of debt forgiveness for these woke college kids to pay out, you know.
So that college thing is a bit of an oxymoron, right? Because they're giving debt forgiveness, but they're not forgiving somebody's debt. They're actually, the debt is just being transferred to the American taxpayer. So it's not really debt forgiveness at all.
So a total of 150. Yeah. Well, the reason why college is expensive is because of the government. The government, secured these student loans. So these colleges say, hey, man, they can jack up tuition rate. No other asset in the world has gone up more than the cost of a college education in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
It is the single most highest appreciating asset. When I went to college, you know, and I paid my own way through. I went to Cornell College. My parents couldn't pay for it, and I paid my own way through. My tuition was $10,000 a year. Now, $10,000 a year, and it was a nice, high-end private school. So there are actually less expensive colleges, you know, than that one. But, you know, when my sons went to college was $35,000 a year.
Inflation.
And they went to the same school. They all went to Cornell too. I don't know what it is now. But again, there's no accountability. Right? When there's no accountability and there's no downside, you know, what happens when you reward good? What happens, Rob, when you reward bad behavior?
You just get more bad behavior. That's what's going to happen. Yeah.
I
always remember you saying, you know, one of the biggest lessons I learned from you in finance and just our friendship, you know, because you're my dear friend, is you always said that it doesn't take very long to create a really big problem. And like, because I remember saying, well, how much damage can they do? And you're like, well, hang on a second. Just you wait and see. In this very short space of time, this one-term administration, they will completely and totally and utterly collapse and destroy the entire US economy. And in the process, they're going to pull everybody down with them, and they're going to try and change the way the entire world works. But in the process of destroying America, they're going to destroy themselves, which is a really strange thing that they're doing. It's like a self-deletion, a self-destruct button that they have with themselves for some reason. Doesn't make any sense to me, man.
Well, you know, it's it's an existential threat thing, right? You know, when your back is to the wall, you get desperate and you lean into whatever it is you're doing. Listen, we know that these people are evil, but they don't think they're evil. You know, I mean, I'm sure that Hitler did not consider himself evil, right? He thought he had a dream, right? He was living his dream, you know. But he is objectively evil. These people, these liberals, they are demonstrably evil, but they don't see it that way, right?
They think that they're not doing anything wrong.
Right. You know, so their idea with the border, now they know that the what they're doing is wrong. They know it's wrong. They know it is, but they're... For them, the end justifies the means, right? They see it. This is strategic for them. If they have to destroy the American way of life in the process, so be it. These people don't like America. They don't like the values that the traditional values that America stands for.
When all else fails, unfortunately, they're gonna take us all to war, and. Today's little podcast here, we've been going for an hour 20. Thank you for joining us. It's been great to catch up with you a little bit here, Ed. If the situation unfolds as daybreak happens, I'm just looking at a couple of my different feeds, looking at YouTube, looking at X and Telegram all at the same time as you're talking there. And I can see that it looks like they've destroyed an Israeli airbase. So if that's the case, taking out some of those Air Force assets, which are the most valuable assets that the Israelis have, that'll be a big, big, big thing. And, man, this is going to escalate, and I'm wondering where it's going to go. I just saw at the top of my Telegram feed, the first lot of footage that I saw was of a whole bunch of Shahid drones launching, and that was at 6:30 this morning. So it's now 11:30 Sydney time, so that's like 5 hours ago that happened. So I'm certain that those Shahid drones are going to be landing on Israel sometime soon, and if they're fired a couple of hundred, maybe 400 or 500 of them at them like that, and all of the air defense systems have been depleted and saturated all at the same time, a lot of them are going to get through. So the first round of airstrikes that we've seen is complete. It looks like it's complete. And I think round 2 and 3 are coming, and that's when the real destruction is actually going to begin. I don't know. Have you got some final thoughts, Ed, some closing remarks before we
wrap it up? All the time, I keep getting this image of that, you know, that proverbial dog chasing the car. So
now you caught it. Now what?
Yeah. No. See, you have to wonder whether, you know, these a-holes in Tehran have thought it through. I mean, what if they actually do, hey, man, we just took out some important bases there. We just really degraded Israel. If we wanted to, we could walk in there tomorrow and take them over. And now they're probably saying, oh, what do you think? I think we should.
Next?
Do you think we
that
should?
That was easier than we thought.
They might have bitten off more than they could chew. Well, because, you know, if we do that, you know, that could really turn the world against us. So you got to wonder, I think we got a really dangerous case of brinksmanship going on here. And a little room for miscalculation about what the other side could do. A lot can happen in 24 hours. So this time tomorrow, we might be having a completely different kind of conversation.
Yeah, well, let's keep our ear to the ground. And if I see anything change, I'll jump back on here on YouTube for another live. I know it's getting a little bit late there in Minnesota, but it's only the start of the day here in Sydney. So I'll keep everybody posted and keep you all updated. Thanks for joining us on a live. We'll see you next time. It's bye for now.